Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The big budget picture, America is groaning under giant debt. But the real solutions are still politically out of reach, maybe too tough. Instead, Republicans and today the president are calling for big cuts in the relative small fry, from NASA to air traffic control. We'll look at what's on the chopping block today and ask how far, how soon this debate may go and whether the country will still look like a place we recognize when the dust has settled. This hour on Point, the budget battles in Washington and where they may take the USA. You can join the conversation. Can you hear the knives being sharpened? Will we cut the right things, spend on the right things, share the pain wisely, protect the future? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In this hour, we will check in on both sides of the aisle on Capitol Hill with Republican Congressman John Campbell and the Democrats, Henry Waxman. But first, to guide us through a complicated debate, are two reporters who really know the terrain of the budget battle. Jim Tankersley, economic correspondent for the National Journal, joins us from Washington. Hi, Jim. Thanks for being here.
Hi, my pleasure.
And from Washington, we're joined by Jonathan Allen, senior congressional correspondent for Politico. Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Jim.
Jim, first
sorry,
to you.
Tom and Jim.
Tom and Jim with you, Jonathan. Jim, first, before we get into what the president is laying out this morning, and a lot of it has already come out over the weekend, remind us where we are in this. There's a Republican debate that was all fired up last week about, what, the remainder of this fiscal year, and the president is proposing what? Lay out just the landscape for us, Jim.
We've got a couple of parallel track debates going on, Tom, is what's happening. We have the Republicans who are talking about, as you said, how do we fund the rest of the year, this fiscal year of government? And that's where they're proposing these big cuts up to $100 billion in cuts from the president's budget from last year, which, point of fact, was never enacted. Mm-hmm. So while they argue about that, the president and try to hammer out a deal to keep the government going with congressional Democrats, the president is proposing his budget for the next fiscal year, which will then kick off another round of fighting and wrangling as we look again past this next continuing resolution.
Now, Jonathan, the Republicans' work on the budget now, which was never formally passed, therefore depends on these continuing resolutions to keep funding the government. That's the thing that's coming up in early March, up against the debt ceiling and the need to raise it. And that's the sort of leverage point in the immediate term for the GOP?
That's right. The government runs out of money on March 4th. At least the government runs out of current authority to spend money on March 4th. It's actually the debt ceiling doesn't get hit till later in the year. There are actually several leverage points right now, but the budget for the current fiscal year, which runs from October 1st of 2010 through September 30th of 2011, is what House Republicans are talking about, compared to what President Obama put on the table a year ago at this time. They're offering $100 billion of cuts, and since we're five months through that budget year, that's $100 billion in 7 months. So it's for the agencies that depend on those dollars, the programs, et cetera, they're actually feeling something much more acute than the numbers sound like. Compared to the current, compared to the past year, those cuts are not $100 billion. They're actually $60 billion still. It's a lot of money for these agencies to deal with, even though it's a very small piece of annual federal spending.
So there's that right in front of us. Lots of fireworks last week among Republicans themselves over whether and how they would hit that $100 billion cut mark that was promised in the fall campaign. Then there's the president's budget he's putting out there today. It's a suggestion to Congress. Republicans, with their majority in the House, will come back with their own. But, Jim, what is in the package, the broad outlines of the package the president is setting on the table today?
Well, the broad outlines are not horribly surprising, but they're still more painful than I think a lot of the president's more liberal supporters would like. You have about a little more than $1 trillion in deficit reduction over the next 10 years. About two-thirds of that comes from spending cuts. Another third comes from tax increases. And what it does is it sort of sets a path to stabilize the current fiscal deficits at about 3% of gross domestic product, even though it peaks at about 11% next year.
So 3%. But then what everybody points out is it goes back up again after, what, 2020 or something like that? Not that far from now, it starts to make a big climb again.
Yeah, it starts to make a big climb again. And also, I mean, the problem is that even as you stabilize the deficit ratio, the debt continues to march upwards and upwards and upwards. And we get a debt to GDP ratio that most economists say starts to get into that red zone, the danger zone. And that's why there's so much pressure, not just on this budget, but on future budgets to do something about the big entitlements, healthcare costs, Social Security, the things that are going to drive the yawning opening of debt in the next, you know, decades to come.
We'll look at the Grand Canyon, but let's just pay attention for a moment to what the president's putting out there today, Jonathan, in terms of cuts or freezes or places where people would have less than otherwise. You know, where does the knife come in President Obama's picture?
Well, there's a sort of whole range of things that will be certainly at least growing at a slower level than they had been. You know, one of the things I think that people are going to pay a lot of attention to is the cuts that he has planned for Pell Grants and the amount that people who are able to get Pell Grants can get from those Pell Grants.
This is support for low-income low-income college students support there in Pell Grants, yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but too used to being inside the Beltway here. And then another thing that I think people are going to focus on is cutting what's called LIHEAP funding, which is home energy assistance for folks in states that are very cold and need home heating oil in the winter, and also states that are very warm. A lot of people don't know this, but the program also covers air conditioning costs for southern states. And so that's something that the president has put out there for a cut. I mean, overall, he's looking at, I want to say, $400 billion over 10 years in domestic discretionary cuts. That's the basic departments that most folks are familiar with, not including the big entitlements, Medicare and Social Security. And we're going to see possibly some consolidation of transportation functions. They want to get rail and highway projects and things like that into one sort of funding stream. Right now, all of that's sort of diversified. And so the choices every year aren't necessarily made as trade-offs between those two things and under one funding mechanism. But, I mean, again, I think, you know, when you're looking at this from an overall level, these cuts, most of which won't be implemented, and some of them, if they are implemented, will later be reversed. For instance, the home heating oil, which every time they shortchange it, they come back and do emergency funding to keep folks warm so that they're not literally freezing to death in New England over the winter. Most of this stuff isn't going to happen. This is like you said, a suggestion, it's a blueprint, it's a statement of the president's values, and it's dead on arrival the second it hits Congress. I think the Senate Budget Committee got it at 8 o'clock in the morning, so if you were a doctor, you would call time of death then.
They're just not going to roll with it. You say they're calling it insignificant. The Republicans are. Jeff Sessions, Senator from Alabama, saying, well, $1 trillion reduction is insignificant, does not get us off on the right course. How do you judge, Jim? What's significant when it comes to the U.S. Budget deficit?
Well, that's a great question, and it's probably answerable in the eye of the budget cutter. But I think that from an economist standpoint, I mean, from what we should be worried about as Americans, there's a couple of things. First off, right now, it's still pretty cheap for us to borrow money. But there's going to get to a point where our creditors aren't very willing to keep lending us these big deficit spending budget amounts of money. So that would be a point where you have to start – you can't hit that or else it really – the costs start to escalate. Same thing with this debt to GDP ratio. You don't want to get to a point as a country where you start veering into Greece or Spain or Portugal territory, which to be fair, we are nowhere near right now. But – That's all sort of a big picture standpoint. Here, it's very political. If you're like you said at the top, we are looking at the smallest part of the budget right now in terms of what they're cutting. They're cutting from the domestic discretionary, most of it non-defense. I mean, that's a tiny chunk.
10% of the overall budget, 90% not addressed by this.
Right, and so
but that's
so,
the same GOP know, and Democrats, both parties, not going for the bigger 90%, not looking at it here.
Exactly, and so the question will be, what What can you do to send – how big does the cut need to be to send a message both to voters and to markets that you're serious about dealing with the bigger stuff? That's what they're really wrangling over with right now.
And, Jonathan, this cut and invest idea, which is the envelope that the Obama budget has brought to us in, where does he invest where the Republicans would not?
Well, really you're dealing with education and infrastructure and I guess in stark contrast to what he's – talking about in terms of cutting subsidies for low-income college students, you've got some more investment at the sort of the lower level of education that he's interested in, and certainly infrastructure, transportation, high-speed rail, sort of the modernization of our national transportation system. These are things that the Republican Congress is not interested in investing in, and in fact, they sort of mock the term investment because they don't believe that it's an investment that's likely to pay any dividends, certainly financially. You know, there's a larger question about this sort of standard of living and competing with other countries, et cetera. But those are the areas that he's really looking at mostly, transportation and education.
Transportation, education, described by the president as investments. The Republicans, as you say, mocking the very word investment, saying it's time to just to really cut back here, though nobody is out beyond that discretionary spending 10% of the overall budget yet. Much more to come. We're going to hear in this hour from a Republican who's right at the heart of that big push for more cuts, and from Henry Waxman, a Democrat, see what he has to say about what the president's proposing today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking about the budget battle on Capitol Hill and where it may take the federal government, the economy, the country. The president rolling out his budget today, this morning. Republicans already deeply into it last year, talking about the year right in front of us, the fiscal year here. The president looking out 10 years and beyond. Jim Tankersley with the National Journal and Jonathan Allen are with us from Washington. Everybody's been talking about over the this whole issue over the weekend. Republican Speaker of the House John Boehner was on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday morning. Republicans going back and forth last week over how much to cut right now. Here he is talking with David Gregory.
David, we're broke. What's really dangerous is if we continue to do nothing and allow the status quo to stay in place. When are we going to get serious about cutting spending?
The GOP with its own debate last week about how much to cut and how soon. Joining us right now from Washington is John Campbell, Republican congressman serving California's 48th district. He's chairman of the Budget and Spending Task Force of the Republican Study Committee. That's kind of the Tea Party lobby for deep cuts. He serves on the House Committee on the Budget. John Campbell, Representative Campbell, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure, Tom. Great to be with you today.
What do you think of the numbers that we're seeing coming out from the president's budget proposal?
I can't say that they're particularly surprising, but they are frightening, I think. His proposal has the deficit increasing again next year, which means it will have increased every year since, I think it's either 2005 or 2006. And you know, I believe that our debt, which is a natural consequence of multiple deficits, is the greatest threat that exists today to American security, American prosperity, and American hegemony around the world, and that there is no greater crisis that we have to deal with right now. And the first thing we have to do is turn the corner on these deficits, is get them to start going down instead of continuing to go up. And in the president's budget, I was disappointed that he's not dealing with the entitlements, because as your guests before said, we have to cut spending in what's called discretionary spending, which is the spending that is subject to annual appropriation by Congress. But we also have to deal with the entitlements, because that is still more than half of government spending. And we have to grow revenues. That's, in my view, those are the three elements we have to do. And the way to grow revenues is through tax reform and economic growth, rather than increasing the tax rates at this particular juncture.
Congressman, the White House says, look, we know this doesn't solve the whole thing, but this is the president's first offer. he can't get all the way out there alone on this. He needs to sort of get into a conversation with Republicans. Do you see at least the beginnings of a path for a conversation here that would go beyond discretionary spending, get into these bigger issues, and do it in a way that's fair? But do you see a path laid out that you could maybe Democrats and Republicans can walk on together to figure this out?
I hope so. I don't think we're quite there yet. I mean, we have had certainly a decade, if not several decades, where if anyone proposed to do anything with Social Security or Medicare or one of the entitlements, they're excoriated for trying to ruin Social Security or ruin Medicare. The fact is, if you want Social Security and Medicare to end, leave them alone. They are actuarially bankrupt. Everyone agrees with that. They cannot continue into the future. I mean, they can for a few more years, but they cannot continue decades into the future without some reform. They will go broke. So the first thing I think we all need to do on both sides of the aisle is when someone proposes a reform package that solves the problem, praise them for making the proposition. Praise them for getting out into the marketplace and saying, you know, I know this is politically risky. I know these are difficult choices. I know there are elements of the population that are not going to like this. But the worst thing we can do is do nothing. And praise them. Now, if you disagree with with the elements of that, then say that. But and that's where I wish the president would make a proposal. And I certainly would praise him for doing that. And I think that would help the conversation, the discussion. I mean, the chairman of the Budget Committee, Paul Ryan, 2 years ago made a comprehensive proposal he calls the American Roadmap that the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, and others agree is a comprehensive solution to the problem. And the president's people last year said they were waiting for the Deficit Commission to report. Well, the Deficit Commission's reported. The president hasn't said whether he endorses their solution or has a different one or whatever. I think that deficit commission actually helped this process and did make it a little safer to propose solutions, but I wish the president would get out there a little more.
Congressman Kimball, let me ask you about this. The framing of the White House is that they want to cut also. They're on board with that, but they want to do it in a way that simultaneously invests in America's future. You know that language. Now, what about this? They put that out there. Republicans have mocked that very phrase of investing in the future. On the other hand, you've got the critics of the GOP saying you guys are ready to, you know, burn the seed corn here. Paul Krugman writing today, you know, the Republican proposal wants to cut nuclear nonproliferation activities. It says, you know, one terrorist nuke can ruin your whole day. It wants to cut IRS enforcement budget, which means more people just not paying their taxes, wants to cut support to nutrition for pregnant mothers and infants and young children. How do you look at this issue of investment or, you know, the other? I don't know. Is it a scorched earth path in the other direction? How do you look at this question?
Well, Tom, words do matter. And when people who like to support more spending use the term investment because it sounds better, and we do the same thing on our side. And so words do matter. To me, an investment is something from which you expect a monetary return, and anything else is some form of spending. That certainly would be the way a business would look at it. That would be the way most of us in our personal lives would look at it.
But the point they're making is there is a monetary return from a healthy population, from a population that has not had a terrorist nuclear bomb dropped on it, from a population where people pay their taxes fairly because they know if they don't, they're going to be caught.
Well, okay, but I just don't agree that that's the correct term. I mean, there's a monetary investment when you spend on food because it keeps you alive. I mean, not a monetary, but a non-monetary.
Yeah.
Return. So in that case, then nothing is spending. Everything that any of us does is 100% investment in one form or another. But here I think, Tom, is the point of this. The total discretionary spending, which I pointed out is everything subject to annual appropriation by Congress, since 2006 has increased 38%. Now, that includes defense and Homeland Security and all that area, as well as the general government operations. And this is during a four-year period. That's between 2006 and 2010. And that's during a four-year period in which there was very little inflation, if any inflation. So I guess the question I have is that how bad was it in 2006? How bad were all these programs? How bad was government service operation, our security, the Defense Department, everything else, in 2006, if we went back to levels of spending like that, does the world really fall apart? And I would suggest that it doesn't, because there's been little inflation, and the government wasn't falling apart in 2006.
John Campbell, Congressman from California, Chairman of the Budget and Spending Task Force of the Republican Study Committee. Congressman Campbell, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. We'll hear in just a moment from Henry Waxman. Let's hear from our listeners. Mike in New Haven, Connecticut. What do you think, Mike? You're on the air.
You know, if I have a budget problem in my household, I have a choice. I can either cut spending or I can take a second job. The Republicans are asking me to quit my current job or cut back on my hours. Okay. And, oh, yeah, I can cut spending as well.
What do you mean, quit your current job? I'm not sure I get the metaphor there. What do you mean, Mike?
In other words, Republicans are pandering to the taxpayers by saying, let's cut taxes.
Uh-huh.
The government, taxes are the government's way of working, of bringing in money. If I have to bring in more money, I take a second job. I don't reduce the number of hours of my current job.
So as a citizen, standing there right there today, Mike, are you ready to see services cut back and pay more in taxes? I mean, that's one way of closing a deficit. Are you ready to go down that road?
I would make some services means dependent. And yes, I'm willing to pay more taxes.
Ready to do what it takes in that view to close the deficit. Mike, I appreciate your call. Let's get Henry Waxman in here. He's calling from Washington, with us from Washington, I should say, Democratic congressman from California's 30th District. That's Los Angeles, Santa Monica, and more, ranking member of the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. Henry Waxman, thank you very much for being with us today.
I'm pleased to be with you.
What do you see in the president's budget? Are you on board?
Well, I think we need to look at it more carefully. It's coming up as we speak. But the president's budget is for 2012, and what he proposes to do is to reduce the deficit, I believe, by half before the end of his first term. He tries to do it in a measured way. There's some programs that will find an increase in spending, and then there'll be programs that will have cuts. But before we even get to that 2012 budget, we're on the 2011 funding bill. We didn't finish that job, and that has to be done by early March. And the Republicans are proposing $100 billion in cuts just on the 2011 budget bill, and then they will go on to the 2012. And some of those cuts that they want to put into effect right away will really be quite dramatic. There'll be devastating cuts to job training, environmental protection, disease control, crime protection, and dozens of others. Critical functions that only the government can afford.
So how do we take on this enormous deficit and not get a kind of, you know, wasteland nation that Democrats often warn we'll be up against if we cut government spending too much? How do you do that, Congressman Waxman?
Well, it seems to me that you have to put the deficit in perspective. This is not something we have to do in 2012. It's going to take a period of time, and it's going to have to involve not just the appropriated funds, but the income, the revenues that we take in, as well as the spending on entitlements. But what the Republicans are proposing is to cut appropriated funds, and that's pretty much what the president is talking about doing, although he is saying that he will stop the tax breaks for the top 1% of the population when he will allow those to expire. Republicans are cutting $100 billion. That's an enormous amount of money, but it's a drop in the bucket when it comes to the deficit. And in the meantime, they would cut programs like the WIC program, the Women Infant program for food for pregnant mothers and infants, mm-hmm. and young children. They want to cut money for USDA, Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration, which means steep cuts for food safety programs at both the Department of Agriculture and FDA. And then they want to cut they want to savage the Environmental Protection Agency by $3 billion, which will be nearly 30% of its current budget. That's an attack on the program to protect our air and our water. And then they go beyond that. They want to add a rider to make sure that FDA can't enforce the law pursuant to a Supreme Court decision that would require regulation of carbon emissions from big power plants and factories that burn the equivalent of 475 rail cars of coal per year. And what EPA is proposing is that they bring in measures for fuel efficiency, which will reduce the carbon emissions, as well as probably make them more competitive and save more money for those industries. But that's not the way those industries look at it. They don't want to have to do anything.
Henry Waxman, you call Republican proposals a drop in the bucket, but then you say they're way too much.
Yes, of course.
So, well, I mean, you say let's put the deficit in perspective, but I think a lot of Americans will hear there, let's kick the can down the road. I mean, put in perspective, fair enough, but how do you get on top of it?
Yeah, I think when you $100 billion sounds like an enormous amount, but our deficit comes to trillions of dollars, and they're not willing to raise revenues, and they're not willing to do anything about the big-ticket items, the entitlement program.
Are you?
Well, I certainly think that we ought to put those on the table and try to figure out a bipartisan compromise. We can't continue down the road where we have entitlements that are out of control and no additional revenues. We can't give tax breaks to the top 1% of the population and then take away food for women, infant, and children who are poverty-stricken.
Look down the road with us for a second. Do you think that President Obama will tempt the Republicans into a dialogue with this budget, or are we headed for a showdown over the debt ceiling? Which is it? He's saying this is a path. Let's start talking here. Will that work, or are we headed for a, you know, just showdown?
I think we're headed for a showdown because I don't think the Republicans want to compromise. They want to use the leverage of the fact that we have to raise the debt ceiling and we have to appropriate funds to keep the government going. And they want to use that leverage to force the president to do what they want. And I don't think the president will do it. And I don't think they're about to compromise because they have so many Tea Party right-wingers that believe compromise is a terrible thing to do. So I think we're heading for a train wreck. It's unfortunate. And I hope I'm wrong, but that's the way I see it.
Congressman Henry Waxman of California's 30th District, thank you very much for joining us, Congressman.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Allen, what about the politics of this? Do you think this will get a conversation going, or is it all about a brute vote force and a train wreck, as Henry Waxman says?
Well, look, there's certainly two very different options there. I think one of the things that you've got going on here, and you heard it from what Congressman Waxman said, I think, is at least the House Democrats, and I think a lot of their colleagues in the Senate, are really going to try to focus on the cuts that Republicans want to make. Even as they're calling them small, I think they're going to want to try to keep the debate on the specific items that are being cut. You heard Congressman Waxman say you can't continue to give tax breaks to the top 1%. At the same time, you're taking food away from women and children in poverty. That's one of the specific cuts Republicans are looking at right now, is to take a lot of money out of the Women, Infants, and Children program. So I think you're at least going to hear folks on the left, like Congressman Waxman, not wanting really to come to the table if the question is going to be how do you cut spending for programs, not just the domestic discretionary ones, but even the entitlement programs that he said he wanted to cut. There's no proposal on the Democratic side for that right now. No proposal for it on the Republican side. And the other thing you've really got going on here is a posturing, I think, by House Republicans to severely cut these domestic discretionary programs, and by the White House to set its marker for where they want to be. And I think obviously there's going to be some wrangling over the annual spending, the president's 2012 budget, the 2011 budget that the Congress is working on right now.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the budget battle on Capitol Hill, what's shaping up there in the Republicans' budget proposals for this fiscal year right in front of us, in the president's proposal for next year and the out years, trying to get a handle on the country's big deficit and stay competitive, the president says. Jim Tankersley is with us from the National Journal economics correspondent there, Jonathan Allen from Politico, senior congressional correspondent. big debate over, you know, what is spending, what's investment, what's our seed corn, what can we let go of here? Here's Paul Ryan on Fox News Sunday, the Wisconsin Republican at the center of budget talks on the GOP side, talking about the investment idea.
If he's talking about coming and having new spending, so-called investments, that is not where we're going. The great debate we're having in Congress now, which is refreshing, is we're debating how much to cut spending, not how much to increase spending. And these early press reports are showing us that he wants paltry savings on the one hand and a lot of new spending on the other hand. Borrowing and spending is not the way to prosperity.
But the White House budget director, Jacob Lew, defended the Obama budget on just those terms yesterday on CNN.
We really do have to do what every American family does. We have to start living within our means. Our budget will get us over the next several years to the point where we can look the American people in the eye and say, we're not adding to the debt anymore. We're spending money that we have each year, and then we can work on bringing down our national debt. The notion that we can do this painlessly it's not possible to do it painlessly. We are going to make tough choices. The question is, do we do it in a way where while we're making the tough trade-offs, we're making the critical investments so that we have a future that creates jobs for the American people so that we can outcompete in the world of the 21st century?
It's not going to be painless, but nobody really wants to talk about the full pain. Victor in Opelika, Alabama. Victor, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I appreciate you taking this call. I just want to tell you, I'm a working person, and I'm tired of Democrats and Republicans both calling Social Security an entitlement. I paid into it. My dad paid into it, and he died before he ever got to draw any. My mom's drawing, and it gets reduced every year. They don't give her no raises, yet Medicare cost goes up or something else goes up. Yet the retirement for the Congress, Senate, and President, after one term is locked in for a huge amount of money, their medical insurance is a huge amount of money that we're paying for. If they'd left the Social Security Fund alone from the 60s and both parties have dipped in the Social Security Fund and used it for the cash cow, we would have money now to pay Medicare and Social Security to be self-funded. But they, their counterparts in previous administrations, had to use that money because it was their candy. Now, they want us to cut our throats more as working people and say, well, you can't have it. Even though I paid in it for the last 30 years of my life, you're telling me that I'm not going to get Social Security. You're going to cut my throat on it. Well, take their, all their retirement needs to be part of Social Security Fund. Same with the health care should be a Medicare plan.
Victor, we've got it. It was there. They treated what you paid in like candy, and now you feel like you come out the loser. Jonathan Allen, look at the politics on this for a minute. We know where the Tea Party's coming from on this. They want deep cuts, but we've got this new, you probably saw it, polling out from the Pew Research Center saying that overall Americans might line up a little more with our caller in Alabama here. They may want to get a handle on the deficit, but there are things they feel that they have coming that they don't want to see cut. How do those public opinion, that profile, Jonathan, how does that factor into what we're going to see unfold on Capitol Hill?
Well, you remember a few years ago, President Bush wanted to carve out a little bit of a personal account from Social Security to give folks the ability to invest a little bit of their own money. The reaction to that was so poor within his own base that it never really went anywhere. Congressional Republicans were afraid to put that on the floor because they knew they had constituents like the gentleman who called in who really believe in that social safety net. And are concerned any time that there's a question about adjusting it. Now, there are several ways to change Social Security that would make it more solvent deep into the future, which don't necessarily require benefit cuts. You can raise the retirement age. You can change taxation for folks who make over I think the threshold's about $90,000, where you stop paying payroll tax on additional income. There are a lot of ways to do it. The idea that the government's going to stop paying benefits anytime soon to people who believe they've earned them from paying into the system is probably off base. I think that would be political suicide.
But I don't think they're talking about stopping benefits, but cutting benefits or raising retirement age. I mean, Mike, our caller, may have his eye right on that front.
Absolutely. I mean, those are possibilities. That's certainly ways to extend its solvency. But what I'm saying is that I think the deepest fears about Social Security going away, if for some reason that was to happen, almost everybody who was elected to office would be thrown out immediately. So while the political sensitivity to tinkering with the programs is great, political sensitivity to the idea that the programs are going to run out of money is even greater.
I think the sensitivity kicks in well before they absolutely go away. Jim, what about on this front of investment versus, you know, irresponsible spending? If the public's looking on, how are they supposed to gauge what is a good and reasonable investment of federal funds in the country's future, and what's, you know, entropy or just same old rolling along?
Well, again, I think what you're looking at now is the question of what helps us compete in this rapidly changing economy that we live in. Just spending money to spend money is not a great long-term solution for growth, although there's still – and this is interesting. No one's really talked about this yet today. There's still this jobs crisis in this country.
Yes, there is.
And there is a question of whether starting to cut back spending now. Some economists, Paul, like you were mentioning, Paul Krugman, doubts that that's the right move right now to cut spending at all. But lay that aside. If you're looking at this medium to long term picture, you're looking at the sort of investments that will help America be competitive, be innovative, to be able to compete in the arenas now where we are losing out to or losing ground to the rest of the world.
How do you judge what clears that bar? You heard Congressman Campbell on the Republican Study Committee saying, "Boy, with that, you could justify almost anything, you know, anything you can call an investment."
Well, that's the trick, right? I mean, if we knew, we'd just do it. If there was some fantastic magic formula for how to beat Germany and China and Europe and everybody else who's emerging as our economic rivals down the line, we would absolutely just be spending the money on that and not worrying about anything else, because that would be raising more tax revenues through growth. Clearly, we don't know that. And so one of the big mysteries of the last decade or so is why we're not doing better in terms of job creation as we outsource more jobs. And the question is, what should, you know, should government be spending more on education, more on innovation, more on, you know, industrial policy things like clean energy? These are big questions. Or should it just be getting out of the way more so that, you know, the private sector can do its own competing?
Let's hear from the president. He spoke today when the budget was when the budget numbers were formally released. He was at the Parkville Middle School in Baltimore at a school making a point about that investment in education. Here's President Obama this morning.
When I was sworn in as president, I pledged to cut the deficit in half by the end of my first term. The budget I'm proposing today meets that pledge and puts us on a path to pay for what we spend by the middle of the decade. We do this in part by eliminating waste and cutting whatever spending we can do without. As a start, I've called for a freeze on annual domestic spending over the next 5 years. This freeze would cut the deficit by more than $400 billion over the next decade, bringing this kind of spending, domestic discretionary spending, to its lowest share of our economy since Dwight Eisenhower was president.
The president this morning as he laid out his budget numbers. Let's go to Hutch calling from Jamestown, Rhode Island. Hi, Hutch, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I continue to get distracted by the discretionary spending conversation. You guys continue to make the point. Everybody seems to understand that whatever ideological battles there may be over large government or small government and the benefits of these entitlement programs, the fundamental way forward has to deal with the larger portions of the budget. And I just feel that there's a dishonesty in the whole process of not dealing head-on with those issues. And I don't know if that has to do with how the public and the citizenry is regarded as not being able to handle that conversation. I sometimes feel as though I'm treated like a child in respect to this conversation. And it's just deeply frustrating to hear about the train wreck that's going to occur over the 10% of discretionary spending, whereas the real conversation, at least unless all you guys are dead wrong, the real conversation has to do with the other 90%.
Well, Hutch, I mean, I think everyone agrees that that's right. The folks off the record at the White House saying, yes, of course, but we just can't get to it politically yet. Here's our path forward, kind of an invitation to a conversation. But when you say let's look at the others, and there you start talking about Social Security, Medicare, and not to mention the Defense Department, but just on the entitlements, do you assume that there's a way to cut them, Hutch, which would both you know, help fix the deficit problem and leave them largely intact? Or are you looking at them and thinking, you know, I'm going to have to give up some entitlement here? How do you see it?
I'm not sure. I like the point that Representative Campbell made, that at least people should come up with proposals and be respected for addressing these major issues. I think it's incredibly complicated. I don't pretend to understand the particulars, and I assume that I will have to give up some stuff, whether it's a later retirement age or some more taxes. But we all have to be willing to play into that, because that's where the meat of the matter is, and I feel that to not be addressing that and to not allow conversation, I don't understand why it's politically off limits. That means to me that as citizenry, we are unable to handle that conversation, and that's a great disappointment to me.
Hutch, I appreciate your call. Jim Tankersley, what about it? Hutch is sick of being sort of spoken to like a child. Is it, politicians, let's step up and talk about this seriously. Do you see elements of that going on here, Jim? Do you see it coming? Do you see one party doing that more than another?
We certainly saw it from both parties in the Deficit Commission, and we saw, I think, a better outcome than most people expected in terms of the number of folks who were willing to sign on, who were commission members there from both sides of the political spectrum. I would say this, though.
But sitting politicians did not pick those up, and the president has not picked up those recommendations in his budget today.
You had some. I mean, Dick Durbin was on that. I mean, he signed on. He's a member of Senate leadership. There were some folks. Clearly, you need more. And clearly, this is also the new MO for the White House dealing with a Republican Congress. They did this just last week with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, too. They're not going to come out and give their own sort of roadmap for where they want to go. They want to negotiate behind the scenes with the Republicans because they're worried that anything they toss up is just going to be vilified.
Let's go to Mary in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Mary, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling to say that as I listen to the Republicans talking about cutting stuff, to me, I'm hearing a whole lot of political cutting, and it seems very hypocritical to me. So I say to you, how can you cut the powerless and the weak and the voiceless in this country and talk about cutting hardworking people's Social Security when, by the way, that's our money, and not plan on taxing the oil companies? Or you talk about repealing the health care law, which would leave the health insurance monopoly in place, which completely stifles competition and makes prices skyrocket. And you want to preserve the tax cuts for the millionaire, billionaire buddies who, helped you buy your seats in the office. And I will like to say that when you start doing all those political cuts where you cut the people you don't like and you protect the people who are your buddies, I believe that America will be doing like Egypt.
Or out in the streets, find some Tahrir Square here in the USA. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, Mary, we got it. Thanks for your call. Jonathan, what about it? I mean, there are elements in here that speak to the president's budget that goes after some oil subsidies. Also, it would raise taxes on higher-income Americans. Can you describe what's in here on those fronts, Jonathan?
Well, I think what we're seeing is the assumption that in terms of taxes, the assumption that the latest tax cuts, which were extended through this sort of coming period here for
yep.
2 years,
mm-hmm.
I think that those are likely to expire. You've also got the president saying that he wants to see tax deductions that wealthy Americans get for charitable contributions, for the home mortgage tax deduction. Wants to see those go away for the wealthiest Americans. So there's definitely a component here, and in fact, it's when he talks about deficit reduction, the largest component is actually tax increases, the ones I just mentioned there. So that's definitely something he's looking at, is that side of the ledger, and frankly, almost no one else is looking at that side of the ledger. It's been, ever since Walter Mondale thought he would level with the American people in 1984 and say he would raise their taxes, very few politicians have been willing to say that. So, those tax increases are here in the budget that he's presented. One thing that I think is also getting lost in this conversation, when we talk about reducing the deficit, we're talking about reducing it from 1 year to the next, but really as a result of, because that's an annual deficit, we're actually seeing a huge addition to the national debt over the period of time. So if you have a $1.5 trillion deficit 1 year, and the next year it's a $1.3 trillion deficit, you didn't save $2 billion. You have a debt of $2.8
billion. You've cut the spending, but you're still seeing your total debt grow, and that is inexorable in here right now. Jim, where do you think this goes?
In 10 years, we're talking about another $7 or $8 trillion in debt added to the 14 that we have now.
Is either party got anything on the table at this point, Jim, that is actionable in Congress that would go after that, what looks like unending growth in the real deficit beneath?
I mean, I think what we'll end up with is going back to the what the Fiscal Commission came out with, and that'll be some sort of a basis for behind-the-scenes negotiations over the next couple of years, maybe the next year, between Republicans and Democrats. I think the one thing that you could see first is maybe some form of corporate tax reform, where you lower rates, you get rid of a whole bunch of loopholes, and you raise a little bit of money from that. That might be a starting point. Again, that was in the Fiscal Commission's report. But, you know, this is hard stuff, and it's going to take a long time.
How do you think it will figure into the presidential campaign? Is it likely to be done as everybody, you know, sort of soldiers up onto the campaign trail? Is that an environment in which this kind of negotiation can take place, even kind of behind the scenes, Jim, or forget about it?
I mean, that's the trick. I don't know that you will be able to do that. I think that it's going to be a long process, and I'm not sure that this will get done before the heat of the campaign starts to overtake everything else.
Well, we're going to hear a lot more in coming days, months, years about investment, seed corn, real spending, fake spending, entitlements, and beyond. But we're beginning to edge into that territory right here today with the president's budget. Jim Tankersley with the National Journal, thank you very much for joining us today. Thanks for your insights.
Thank you.
And Jonathan Allen at Politico, thank you so much for being here, Jonathan.
Thank you. Take care.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. We'll keep watching. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.